It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. With nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
Okay, let's get down to business because we have got to talk about what's happening in the next 2 days. Let me tell you, what's happening in the next 2 days is we're going to see the first frost in Mobile, the first frost in Pensacola. It's going to be 23 degrees, according to the forecasts, in Jackson, Alabama. 24 degrees or so in Brewton. Pascagoula, 28 degrees. It's going to be incredibly cold. And is this normal? I'm going to tell you, no. It's not. And we're going to have to do a little bit of, we're going to have to do a bit to get prepared for it. And I've been trying to get prepared for this for several years now. Let me tell you why. I went back and looked. Our average last frost, just to give you a sense, our average last frost in Mobile is around November 30th. It could be, let's say December 6th or so would probably be the average in, say, Midtown over many decades. At least it was. And it might be a little earlier, like November 28th, maybe out at the airport. But right around there, if you look back over the past, and I went and looked at a pretty quick look at the data, and it clearly shows that not only are we, I mean, basically 75% or more of the first frosts are now occurring much earlier, on or much earlier than our average last frost date, our average first frost date. And in many cases, our first frost isn't occurring on November 30th. It's now occurring November 10th. It's now occurring even earlier. It's occurring mid-November and then sometimes even in October. It's wild. And what's going to happen is that in the long term, we're going to have to change the way we think about our growing season. What is this thing we're talking about when we're talking about gardenings? We're talking about, you got to know your seasons. You got to understand your seasons. You got to know when to plant. You got to know how long things are going to grow. You got to know how to prepare for that first one. And so I talk about six seasons. And I could talk about them with some confidence. A few years ago, I don't have as much confidence in those six seasons anymore. Not because we don't still have our summer seasons that are pretty intense and we still have very different seasons than in other places, but our seasons are changing. One of the interesting weird things about it is that in general things are just getting warmer. Certainly our winters are getting warmer, our winter nights are getting warmer in general, but then we get these weird things like this very early frost, and we get 2 feet of snow. What's going on? Well, we can look at it. You know, they used to say that you could that the climate in North America was determined by the beating of butterfly wings in the Amazon. That was kind of a joke, but it was. I mean, there's some relevance to it. Things are linked. They're connected. And I wouldn't think that 10 million people and hundreds of millions of cars and jets and all those other things, they can't possibly have, and cows and land clearing and all of that could possibly have any effect or could possibly overwhelm the impact of butterfly wings and the Amazon. regardless of why it's happening, what's happening is that we're getting warmer days in general, and then these sudden outbreaks of severe cold. And that's the worst combination. It's not something you give up on. It's something you prepare for, and it's something we've been talking about because it's the way our winters are trending. We've always had that problem in the South with warm days following with a real deep cold snap, but right now it's getting more significant. It's getting more important to how you garden. So we want to talk about that. How are you going to get ready for this? I don't think a lot of your plants are ready for this, by the way. At temperatures like this, we could see real damage to things that normally wouldn't be damaged. Certainly if you planted a citrus this fall and it's a young'un, you definitely need to cover it. Even, I, your cabbages, your collards, your kale, they need a little bit of this cold, and they're probably going to be good for it. But if the wind is heavy and with the cold this intense, particularly up around Jackson, Alabama, maybe in Agricola, up in northern Baldwin County around Bay Minette, you're probably going to need to think about covering even some of your winter vegetables. Not heavily, just a little bit to protect them from this excess cold, because the leaves, the edges will burn. Broccoli could be very sensitive, even though broccoli could easily stand temperatures in the low 20s. If it's acclimated, if it's had a chance to get used to these colder temperatures, and a lot of plants haven't. So we got to think about that. We got to talk about that. So let's talk about that this morning. I want you to ask me questions about what's going on in your yard. A lot of plants are going to be fine. The azaleas will probably be fine. The camellias, yeah, you're going to lose some flowers, but they'll be fine. But there's going to be some plants, and it's going to be hard to have a whole list of everything, but you listen out, and let's go through piece by piece. And again, it's not that this is the coldest you will experience this winter. It won't be. It's the fact that this cold comes out of nowhere, and plants aren't ready for it. They need to brace themselves, and we need to begin preparing ourselves for these exceptional cold spells that keep happening, that keep breaking in, and it's not hard to do. It's very simple. We're going to talk about those procedures on today's show and how to fix your garden up so it'll be ready. And I also encourage you to begin thinking about, all gardening success is really about being sensitive to the weather around you, paying attention to it. And sometimes that means looking back at some old records, which is what I do as much as possible, and seeing, okay, what did it used to be like, and how is it changing now? And how am I going to adjust to that to make my garden work? And that's one discussion that we're going to have a lot more now, I'm afraid. But it's okay. We can work through it. Let's just talk about it. Give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. I did take off last week. I needed some time off. I get tired of hearing myself talk sometimes. But it was a good week off, and we're ready to come at it again with your questions, so feel free to give us a call this morning. We'll let's look at it. Let's look at it piece by piece. Let's look at it yard by yard. Let's understand what's happening. This cold is going to be consequential. All right, good.
Down south, how the weather in the Delta, how the food tastes in skies.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch. Ask Bill about gardening and nature in your backyard. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. So, interesting picture Wayne sent me. Wayne, it looks to me like you've got some kind of aphid, which we don't normally see being a big problem on pines. And that those, so Don, Wayne sent me a picture of pines that have black soot all along the needles, particularly at the base of those needles and around the trunk. And generally that sootiness is not the problem. That sootiness is just a fungus that happens to be growing on insect poop, which is a term we have to use frequently here for various reasons, excuses. There's no better term for it. And so the fungus grows on the insect poop, but it's the insect poop that you really want to try to figure out, well, why is that happening? And more than likely, it's an aphid. If you look carefully, you may see before the freeze, you may see some signs of aphids on those pines. And they're little creatures that will be hanging out and they'll be pooping. It's very rare that I see it become a big problem on pines. The fact that it is a problem makes me wonder a little bit. But here's the thing. You better look quick, because as soon as the cold comes, it's going to wipe those aphids out. You'll still have the black sooty mold because the poop will be sitting there like the horses leave a pile and it stays there long after they're gone. It's going to stick around and it's going to be black, but it's not going to harm the tree a lot. And with a few rains, that should wash out. Do you need to cut the tree down? No, other than the fact that it's a loblolly. No. I think that's a loblolly. Let me double check. But no, I don't think you need to cut the tree down. It's definitely a loblolly, I think. Maybe a slash, but probably a lob. It should be okay. And for some reason, that tree got hit by aphids. Which is hard to figure out. Not sure why. That sometimes happens. Not going to spread to your other pines, particularly not now. Particularly not now. Yep. And so, Jim in Georgetown, got to get 28 degrees. Yeah, it's not going from 70 degree nights to 28 degrees like it saw a state trooper. So it's good analogy there, Jim. We have had cooler nights. I'm a little worried though that when these first nights dip really low, it can be a problem. And I just don't like seeing them show up this early. It's a little worse farther south in Alabama than it is even in North Alabama. It's kind of interesting. I mean, it's going to be exceptionally cold all throughout the United States because we're getting we used to call these things Arctic clippers or whatever, but basically what's happening is that whatever barriers there are that tend to keep this cold air contained have broken down. And rather than spinning around the Arctic, it spins down into North America. And this one, and they've been coming earlier. And it's much earlier given our usual frost. Listen, here's here's where we are with getting ready for this cold. I would strongly recommend that if you've got vegetables out, cool season vegetables, that are normally going to like this cold really well, It's going to be good for them, but it's going to be not only cold, but pretty windy. I would advise covering them lightly, just a little bit, to protect them from the wind on the Gulf Coast. If you're around Jackson, 24 degrees, 23 degrees, that's pretty severe. And up, if your forecast is for down below 25 degrees, you really need to cover them well. And what do I mean by covering? And we talk about this a lot. I actually bought a roll of frost cloth because it makes it really easy and it's not that expensive, and I've had it for years. And the frost cloth survives year to year. It gets some rips and tears, but it's okay. And I can always, and it's not expensive. It's one of the least expensive things that you could do for your garden. And it makes a ton of difference. If you put on a frost cloth on your vegetables, it's always good to put it to raise it to, rather than letting it sit directly on top of those vegetables, to have something that raises it up just a little bit, so that it's not touching, those vegetables. And that helps a lot. And then tie the edges down, because it's going to be windy. I use little white PVC, Schedule 40 pipe, and I just use the little 1-inch pipe. Just create a hole, small hole, that you can put that pipe in. It bends over really well. And then you can just lay the cloth over it and clip it on. Just little clothespins won't work. But they sell little cheap plastic clips that are used. You can buy a little bag of them at almost any place. And just clip them on or tie them on however you feel like. And that should protect it. Hold those edges down so that it doesn't get bothered by the wind. What are you going to do about the... Let me suggest that if you have a young citrus, if you can cover the whole tree on a night like this, I think it'll be beneficial. I think it's fine to let the cloth cover and touch some of the upper leaves. That wouldn't be a major loss if they got burned a little bit. But bring it down like a tent. Don't pull it in like a balloon. Leave it out like a tent, because you want to trap that ground heat and let it get around the plant. Those young plants, really important. Older plants, they're just going to have to survive this pretty well. Jim, I think, is sanguine about it. Jim in Georgetown. I don't think he's... My bet is Jim's not going to cover his citrus. And he probably will be okay. Probably he'll be okay. We'll see. But it's these are the kind of things you need to think about. Bananas are going to be an even bigger problem. And we need to think about that. And so, what is it, Nancy? Nancy, is Nancy calling? Did I get that right? Yeah, Nancy, I'm listening. Tell me what's going on. Nancy, are you there?
Hello?
Nancy, you're here.
Huh. Yes, I'm here. Hi. So good. I have a dwarf Cavendish banana, and I have bananas on it that are growing. And it says, when you glean the bananas, then cut the stalk down because it won't bear on that stalk anymore. Does that mean all the way to the ground, that big stalk that they're hanging from?
Yes, it does.
Okay,
You could leave the stalk. It won't matter. Okay. It just will look ugly because it's going to die. But you'll get lots of young sprouts around the base.
I do. I continually do, and I cut most of them down, cut most of them off.
So what's going to happen, Nancy? We might. So I want you to hold on in case we run out of time. But here's the important thing: you're going to need one of those stalks to survive the winter. So don't cut them all down.
No. Just the one that has. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
All right. Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Pick up everything from you get down. On your bended knees, I ain't going to. I dig no more taters. I decline I ain't going to pick no peas. Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I get down on your bended knee.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Questions on conservation, natural history, and gardening? Talk with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, so lots of good questions. Wayne, I hope I helped you there. You can take a look at that little pine. B Dark sent me a picture of something that looks like an orange, and probably is an orange. I wouldn't know unless you try it, B Dark, and tell me what it tastes like. It won't hurt you, I don't think. It could be a really good-tasting orange. It could be a moderately good-tasting orange. I don't know. It looks, just appears to be an orange at this stage. It could be rootstock, but it doesn't really look like Cleopatra or some of the other rootstocks that we sometimes see around that have orange-like fruit that are pretty tart. But I think you're just going to have to try the fruit and tell me what it's like. And then I probably couldn't tell you the exact variety, but we would have a good sense. You would probably be able to know immediately whether it was an orange. But it looks orangish to me. And it's a big, pretty one. So what's going to happen to citrus during this cold? I would say if you've got a kumquat and someone asked planted a kumquat, what should I do? Probably nothing. Kumquats are pretty good. They're pretty tough. They'll be fine. I don't think you're going to see any damage. As long as it's a miwai or one of the typical kumquats, it should be just fine. They can survive a lot of cold. And in fact, exposing them to this amount of cold is good. But kumquats are the exception where citrus is concerned. Most other citrus, when they're young, probably need to be covered. I would just, as a precaution, cover them on a night like this. And young, by young, I mean somewhat younger than the Satsuma that somebody sent me a picture of. Who was that? Should I pick my clementine oranges before this freeze? I will be covering. Tree is 3 to 4 years old. The first significant production. This looks like a pretty tough tree. You've also got some protection there and already. And here's what that protection is. You have a pine tree over it, which is actually helping to hold in heat. One of the things that you can do is what you've done is to move those pine needles away from the tree as much as possible. It's going to be a little tricky to cover that tree because it's gotten big enough that it's kind of sprawly, but you could certainly cover it. I think, not sure where you are, as long as the temperatures stay above 28 degrees, I think you'll probably be okay. Probably. But it won't hurt to just put a little bit of cover over it. Definitely expose it to the cold tonight. Definitely let it get the cold tonight if you're on the Gulf Coast, because you won't have really cold temperatures until, Tuesday morning, right? So let it adjust, and then throw a little tarp over it if you're worried. I wouldn't worry too much because it's usually the whole tree is big enough to withstand the cold, and I think it's probably going to be just fine. It's just those newly planted trees that can be really, really difficult. So Pete Hark said it tasted like pine sap. So it is. I can't. B-Dark, did the tree that you were trying to get the fruit from, did it have leaves in clusters of three? If so, it doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like it should be a trifoliate orange. I think it's probably one of the older rootstocks, and some of them can be very resinous, the fruits that they produce. And some people use those fruits, but I suspect it's one of the old rootstocks, like the old crown. It could be Cleopatra. It could be a couple of others that were used to graft on oranges that were desirable. And the rootstock is not terrible, but, you know, it's not great either, the fruit from it. And so it might have some uses and not others. If you feel like it tastes too much like pine resin, it's probably not going to be as useful to you as it might be otherwise. So there it is. I would guess it is one of the old rootstocks like Cleopatra. Let's see. Yeah, Jim sends me a picture. I am guessing this kumquat will be just fine. And what Jim has is a kumquat that is actually bigger than his bananas. And up, I can't quite tell, but probably very up near the peak of his house. They can get big with time, and they're pretty healthy, and I think it is going to be fine. Kumquats are really great. While we're on the subject of citrus, David, my friend, who works with various groups who do inspections, David tells me that we found citrus canker in Mobile and Baldwin counties again, and that means you're going to go under a quarantine. When people don't really think about what's happening when they drag plants from one place to another, and when they bring themselves from one place to another, and a lot of things come with that, and you need to be a little careful where you're buying your citrus. We have introduced yet again citrus canker, and it's a very serious disease. And so we'll be under quarantine. It's going to be much harder to purchase citrus again because of this quarantine. And it's a good thing. It really does mean that it's going to be very hard to ever have a citrus industry in Alabama. And it's just going to be incredibly hard with these new diseases continually re-entering. Yeah, B-Dark, I would say that your owner wants you to murder it, and I would say it's probably not a great loss. You can do so without a lot of worry. It's probably a pretty tree, though. I mean, if you think about it, it's not a bad-looking tree. It's going to have nice white flowers. It's got nice orange ornamental fruit all over it that it will hold on to for a long time. But it's not going to be probably something you're going to want to eat a lot of. High Plains Drifter is asking about what's the best lemon tree to plant and what kind and what when best time to plant. Today's like today are one of the reasons why... Weeks like next week are one of the reasons why I would not recommend planting most lemons outside. Put them in a pot. That's the best way to go. McIntosh is a little far north for a lemon hybrid we used to grow a lot in Mobile, which was called Myers Lemon. And it's a fine tree. McIntosh gets a little bit cold for Myers Lemon. I think you're going to lose it most of the time. And I would just generally recommend, given the low temperatures you're likely to see this week and several times this winter, that I wouldn't recommend planting a lemon outside. Now, you can do what you want, certainly, and you can do what you want. But I wouldn't recommend it. I would recommend putting the lemons in the pots. And there's just a whole lot of advantages to doing that. And just regular old Lisbon lemon is a great lemon. If you're growing Myers lemon and you're growing it in a pot, it also is really great. Just get it on dwarfing rootstock if you're putting it in a pot, if you're getting a Myers lemon. And I like the flavor of Myers lemon. It's not like traditional lemon. It's like a cross between a orange and a lemon, which essentially it is. Maybe a satsuma and a lemon, something like that. And it's a hybrid. It hasn't had its own distinct flavor. And you could, but I would, at that far north, I would recommend growing it in a pot as well. It's going to be very hard to keep those alive when temperatures drop down into the lower 20s a lot, and they do at McIntosh more often than, say, in a place like Midtown Mobile, where I think it's easier, and Fairhope, where it may be easier to grow Meyer's lemons, though there have been challenges there over the past few years because of these exceptional cold spells. But put them in a pot. That's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. Let's see. What else have we got? Ultra Runner, thank you for your weather advice. Can you speak about how to water before the freeze? So in the past, I've tried to advise people to cover plants so that they can retain their citrus. Just do a little bit, and it can make a big difference. And Ultra Runner covered his citrus, I think, last year before that snow, and it actually did really well. He's got a lot of fruit on it. How to water before the freeze? I would say you've probably had enough rain in Mobile and on the Gulf Coast that it doesn't matter a whole lot. If your area has been very droughty, it might help a little bit to water, but it's probably not going to help a lot. There's probably enough moisture already in the ground. I think the more important thing, and this is very important, I think the more important thing if you've got a citrus or other tree that you want to protect is to recognize that the ground heat itself is really important. We should have plenty of moisture in the ground, which helps the ground hold on to heat. But you've got to have a way for that heat to be released from the ground and to be captured before it leaves the canopy of whatever it is you're trying to protect. And so the first rule is that if you've got a citrus, pull the mulch away, or if you've got pine leaves under it or junk under it, pull the pine straw away, pull those leaves away, pull your mulch away out beyond the drip line of the tree so that that heat from the ground can protect the canopy. Now, I wouldn't do this with things that are perfectly hardy. You don't want to do it with things like, let's say you have gone to the trouble of peaches or you've got blueberries. All of those things, the mulches are fine. The camellias, it's fine to keep the mulch. It's fine to keep the mulch on the azalea. All of those are going to be fine. But this is for plants that are sensitive where you need extra ground heat. I wouldn't worry as much about the watering as making sure that ground heat comes up into the canopy and doesn't leave the canopy.
Because everything on the front gonna get down. On your bend of knees, I ain't gonna dig no more taters. I declare I ain't gonna pick no peas. Because everything.
You get Plain Talk on Plain Living. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. I think it's wise to prepare for the cold. It's a little early. And a lot of things aren't ready. You know, here's the neat thing. If you can get your plants past, if you can get your plants past this immediate cold spell, they're going to do fine. Because in general, our winter temperatures are getting warmer. It's just that we're getting these weird, freakish outbreaks. And so if you just invest a little bit of time in the weird, freakish outbreaks, you're going to have great weather. You're going to have temperatures in the 70s next week. That things will still respond and they'll still grow. Even though the days are getting shorter, they've still got a lot of growing in them. So you might even consider those of you who are only going to get 30 degrees, you might even consider covering your tomatoes, covering your peppers, so that you'll have them a little longer, just a little longer. So those are things to consider. What am I, you know, I, basil. Basil's going to be really sensitive to cold. It really hates it. But I hate to lose basil. And maybe my parsley hasn't come on as strong as I would like, because, you know, this is the time of year I switch from eating a lot of basil to eating a lot of parsley. Oh, you should try it. It's delicious. It's incredible. You can make a great pesto out of it. And a lot of arugula and a lot of those things. But maybe they're not quite ready yet. That's okay. Just cover them. Cover them and let them go. Broccoli is going to be another thing, as I've said. I would go ahead. Broccoli can be really sensitive to these sudden. It's the sudden cold that becomes the problem. And just to make sure that my heads didn't get burned, and the tops of the heads, Jim, even you might think about this if you've got broccoli. The leaves may do fine, but the tops of those heads, because it is a flowering plant, you might want to cover that, because those little buds will burn, because they're more sensitive than the leaves. So these are temperatures that you do want to think about if you're gardening. And if you've got, let's say you had planted marigolds and they're looking particularly good, and normally marigolds, grape fall crop and a grape fall plant, and the bloom should last right up until the normal first frost in December and even later some years. Well, all you got to do is cover them through these cold spells, and they'll keep blooming right in, probably into December. Worth thinking about. Just a little bit of cover. And why does the cover work? Let me emphasize this to you, folks. The cover works not because it keeps out the cold. The cover works because it keeps the ground from losing all of its heat to the sky, and the heat from the ground, which is considerable, collects around the plant and stays there, rather than it filtering up through the plant and being lost to the night air. If you've got a citrus that's got a full head of hair, like Jim in Georgetown citrus, I mean, it's massive. It's got a ton of leaves, and it's gonna collect that heat under those evergreen leaves, and it's not gonna let it leave. And so it's a mature plant. Just the mere structure of the plant and the structure of those leaves is going to help it. You could help it even more by putting another blanket on top, but it won't need it, because that's a kumquat, and because it's already got plenty of leaf structure there. And that clementine that somebody asked me about, should I cover it? Well, it's got plenty of leaves, and then it's got the pine tree over it. I bet that clementine is going to do just fine through this cold. And it won't really hurt the fruits too much at 28 degrees, which is about what it's going to be, I think. But if you've got a young tree that doesn't have a lot of leaves, you see what I'm saying? You don't have any way to trap the heat from the ground. So you want to make sure the ground is clear so that that bare earth can give up its heat into the canopy, and then cover the top of your plant with a tent, not with a balloon, because you're trapping the ground heat. A tent, and that will keep you from losing that heat to the air. There you go. So just trying to prepare you, I think it makes a difference. If the cold snap is going to hurt my angel trumpets, Be Dark ask. Well, it's a great question. It's not going to be good for them. I think you're far enough away from the coast. I think you're probably going to get some damage that I don't think you'll see it bloom again. Could you cover it? It's getting big. It's going to be hard to cover. You might have it squeak through. You might have it squeak through if you can cover it. with a tarp, even a tarp. You don't want to cover it with clear plastic. Don't do that kind of stuff. You don't really want to cover it with black plastic. But a blue tarp works great. And I don't want to get into the differences, but there's some differences. And I think that could work. You could throw that over, it'd probably help a lot. You might make a difference even with a sheet. But yes, I think this cold will burn the leaves off, and you won't have any more flowers this year. Will this cold kill your Datura, your Brugmansia, your angel's trumpets? No. It will come back from the roots next year. It's just that you won't see any more blooms this year. But it'll clearly come back from the roots next year without a problem. Does that help, Bee Dark? Let's see here. What else we got? We're going to do container top garden 5 this year. They'll all be coming in the garage on 32 degree nights. So Jim's putting his garden in containers, which means he can move them around pretty easily, which is a nice thing to do. And that's good. So on the lower than 32 degree nights, he can bring them in. Beautiful Sasanqua archway. Jim has got a picture of that I think is very nice. And Don says we should all prepare for things that are out of the ordinary. We always have to prepare for things that we don't expect. It's always the case. It's always part of life. And you look at the probabilities. I mean, you can't prepare for everything, or you would do nothing. So you look at the probabilities and you say, yeah, what can happen? And you look at trends and you say, yeah, this is happening. You want to understand those trends, don't you? So you want to look at the weather, look at the seasons, look at these first and last frost dates. It's what we've been doing for a while on our show, is trying to define what is a season here in Alabama, and how do we take advantage of the seasons? We don't let Boston's a very nice place, but we don't let them tell us what our seasons are. We'll be back.
It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. With nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. We got several things to talk about. We definitely want to talk about the cold and any questions you have about it. Carol, I'm going to get to your redbud question here before too long. So what are some of the other, Confederate rose? I want to get to this one real quickly. Somebody asked me how to propagate a Confederate rose, and they don't have much time. There's an easy way to do it. Confederate rose is actually a hibiscus. It's not a rose. It's not native to the South, has nothing to do with that Confederate thing that some folks participated in 100 and something years ago, and some folks would still like to participate in. Had nothing to do with that. It's got to do with, I think, the Confederacy. It may refer to. It's a name that's been around for a while, and it may refer to a Malaysian Confederacy. I'm not sure, but it's got nothing to do with the South. But they grow well here. And they're a hibiscus, and so they're very different than roses. You can propagate them even with hardwood cuttings, I've found, just cutting some tips off and putting them in the ground, and some percentage of them will probably root But here's what I would recommend. This is a little safer. You'll get a higher percentage. It's fine today. This is your last day to do this. Listen to me now. Go out and cut the tips. And you can cut them to a size that's convenient. A foot long with a couple of buds on it is just fine. Cut them so that a bud is near the bottom. The little things along the side, there are little bumps along the sides that are the buds where leaves occur. You'll have to strip off the leaves on that foot-long cutting. Let's say it's a foot long. And leave just a few leaves on the top. Don't leave any flowers on. And then get you a bucket, a potting bucket, just like a, you know, like maybe you bought an azalea in. Maybe it's a five-gallon potting bucket would be a nice size. Put some soil in it. Any soil will work. And then stick those cuttings in there. Put about, I don't know, I'd put five or six, seven, eight to a bucket. And a huge percentage of those will root, just doing it like that. Now, you'll have to keep it in a warm place so that those leaves will stay on there, and those leaves will drive the roots to start producing. So do that, put it in a bucket, and bring it inside for the evening, so that it gets over this cold spell, and keep it in there for a couple of nights, three nights, until the temperatures get in the 70s again, and then you can put it outside until the temperatures at night start dropping below, say, 38, 36, 37, and then bring it in. And those will root pretty well without any problems. You need to water it a little bit. Does that make sense? Tell me if it doesn't, and we'll figure it out. We have a couple of callers. Let me see. Our first caller is, oh, it's Thomas. And Thomas is actually calling about Confederate Rose. Thomas, did you hear all that? Okay, good. Good, good. Paul, I'm listening. What's up?
How you doing, Bill?
Good.
Got a couple of questions for you about milkweed.
Yes, sir.
I've got some, and I got it from my aunt. It's really taken off the last couple of years. I just love it. Got a garden area, and it just kind of pops up all over the place, and I just let it grow where it wants to, and the bees and hummingbirds and butterflies, everybody loves it. Well, if I was to dig some of it up and put it in some pots, would it overwinter in the greenhouse, or does it need to die back?
There's a lot of different milkweeds in the world, and I don't know which one you have.
It looks kind of almost like Miss Huff lantana. It's kind of orange and yellow.
Yeah, so that's a tropical milkweed. It'll do fine in a pot. It'll do fine in a pot. There is a little bit of a concern about that tropical milkweed being invasive and creating problems for monarchs. I would say that the plants you have in your yard are probably not going to be a huge issue, but it's something to think about. Our native milkweeds are better for monarchs, if that's what you're concerned about. Will this survive in a pot? Yes. Most people grow it in pots. You're just in a climate where it's warm enough to leave it outside for most of the year.
Well,
and it'll probably survive the winter. Yeah.
I didn't really get it for the monarchs. I just got it because I liked the way it looked, which is kind of a, you know, it's just, and, but this, about a month or so ago, we had yellow and black little, caterpillars on there, and I'm assuming they were in the monarch family.
Yeah, they probably are monarchs. And so one of the concerns about those is that they actually promote diseases in monarchs because they flower continuously, and so it's not that the monarchs don't use them, they do, but because they are tropical and they bloom for a very long period of time, they are better at concentrating diseases that might affect the monarchs. So that's something to think about. But can you grow it in a pot? Absolutely.
All right. Then my other question is, I got from a friend of mine some of what she calls the older lady. She called it the old milkweed. It's just yellow. And she gave me some seeds about a month ago, and I put them in a brown paper bag. Can I go ahead and grow those in the greenhouse, or I just need to wait till the spring for them to grow those?
All right, so the old yellow, I'm going to guess, is Asclepias tuberosa, which in your part of the world is mostly yellow rather than orange, which it would be farther west. It's Rolfii is the variety. I think that's probably what you have. Now, it's because it's a native, it needs cold weather. It needs chilling outside, and it will take a couple of years for those seeds to emerge. It'll probably take two winters, particularly since they've dried out, for them to emerge. So put them in a place. You don't want to grow them in a greenhouse. They won't do there. If they are the native, they will need a little bit of chilling outside for those seeds to really break dormancy. So you can do it two ways. If you put them in a pot, and that's a fine way to do it, you're going to have to tend to that pot for a couple of years, which is probably, you're probably going to lose patience. And then as soon as it germinates, you're going to have to put it in the ground because they have a root system that is absolutely humongous, which is one of the reasons they survive really well, and it's hard to dig them up. So my recommendation is find a place where you want them to grow. It needs to be full sun. It needs to be a place where you can kind of remember where they are and sow them there rather than sow them in a pot.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds like what I'll do. And I'm enjoying your show this morning. Great show.
All right. Good to hear from you, Paul. Yeah. So it's milkweed is this huge subject. We should spend a whole show talking about milkweeds. I could do that. It's a lot of fun. We have a lot of milkweed diversity in the South, and one of the things I think we forget about is how important the Gulf Coast is to monarchs. Folks out in the Midwest talk about how important they think they are to monarchs, and they are. And particularly on the return flight, but on the flight up from Mexico, monarchs use the Gulf Coast extensively, and so they need Asclepias. They need milkweeds that are blooming early. And our native milkweeds bloom early in the year, and that's when it's most important. That's when it's most important to provide flowers for those monarchs. And why is that? Why are they matched so well? Well, in part because the monarchs, if I may say so, evolved with these Asclepias, these milkweeds that were blooming relatively early. You know. And they moved up into New England. We'll be back.
Walk along the river, sweet love by. You just keep on flowing. You don't worry about where it's going. No, no.
FM Talk 106.5, home for plain living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106.
Yeah, all right. So back to this thing about cold. David Hubble is going to cover his melatonin. And that's one other thing that needs to be done if you're working with melatonin. Melatonin doesn't start blooming until the days get short. And David's now is full of blooms. And he wants to collect the fruit, which normally we can do because our frosts are so late. And, well, normally. Except, David, think with me. How often has this happened when our first frost is now almost is weeks ahead of where it used to be, and it's coming sooner, and so it's getting harder and harder to do things like melatonin, which used to be very much a part of the Gulf Coast. But David is trying to cover it because just this simple covering on that melatonin will probably get it past this cold spell where David is. And then he will have many warm days left before he gets another cold spell, more than likely. So these are the kinds of things we're going to have to do because things are changing for us. Things are changing for us. And one of these days we'll actually be able to talk about why without pulling our hair out, maybe. But they're changing, and that's what we got to get used to. We just got to adapt to it right away. The other thing, David, I wanted to say is I was shopping at a Mennonite store in North Alabama. And the Mennonites are always doing interesting things, much more interesting than certainly more interesting than any other farmer out here anymore. They have got their hands in lots of different vegetables. And they had melaton that they're growing themselves. And one of the Mennonites, which is an old order Mennonite community, was apparently from a Caribbean island, or maybe from Belize, I think it was. But interestingly, his melaton were producing. And even if they had them in a greenhouse, and I don't think they did, I think he had them on a trellis, they were flowering very early and producing fruit very early. I got to talk to that guy. Huh? I mean, this is North Alabama. Pretty exceptional. So, yep. So, it's interesting that these frosts are occurring very early. David, I went back, and at the airport, the number of times that we've had a mid-November frost over the past 20 years, pretty remarkable. Perhaps not as frequently at your house, but it's been pretty frequent. Let's see. What else we got? Jarhead, I'm listening. Tell me what's up.
Morning, Bill.
Morning.
We're going to have some interesting conversations, I can tell, next Sunday, but I wanted to ask you a question. I had cleaned up a spot at some property that we had inherited, and I went back the other day, and these strange-looking plants had sprouted everywhere with red cones on them. And I'm wondering if you have ever heard of shampoo ginger.
Yes, indeed. It's an old Gulf Coast heritage plant. You see it a lot. And it's Sarcuma. It's a member of the Sarcuma group, along with hidden gingers. I think I'm right. And yes, and it's really neat and very easy to grow along the Gulf Coast. Yes, I have definitely heard of shampoo ginger. And for those of you who don't know, as Jarhead now knows, if you squeeze the tops of those cones, they ooze a kind of a liquid that people used to use as shampoo. And if you still see it, if you see a shampoo that says, oh, it's got ginger something or another in it, it's this plant that they are claiming to put in there. How much they put in there is open to question, but that it's kind of a neat little stuff, and people use it, and it's nicely fragrant. And, you know, does it have enough detergent in it to get the oil out of your hair? I'm not sure I know, but it's a good conditioner, I would guess, and people certainly use it.
It's just strange that I have never seen it around here before.
Yeah, I you know, we see it all the time in old mobile yards, and it's you don't see these kinds of plants. I think there are probably several nurseries that may carry it, but you don't see them in like Lowdown Depot or places like that because those plants don't grow well up north, and so they don't carry them, and people don't ask for them because, you know, we all garden like we live in Boston, so it's it's weird, but they're very much a part of Southern heritage. They're very much a part. They're not native here, but we've had them in Mobile for a long, long time.
And they are fairly aggressive growing, I understand, and very easy to propagate.
Yeah, and B Dark says she has a yard full of them. So she just sent me a message. She's listening, and so yeah, you can get, they can spread pretty good. I don't know, you know, they're going to spread. And if you've got a garden with lots of other plants that you cherish, you probably don't want to plant it in there with them, because they might overrun them. But they're not excessively aggressive, though. They're probably not as aggressive as butterfly ginger, which is the white ginger, what some people call butterfly lily. But the big white blooming ginger is very aggressive, and it will just overrun everything. I think shampoo ginger is somewhat less aggressive.
Well, all I can say is, you know, if somebody out there wants to plant some, I really suggest they go ahead and do it, because it's a pretty nice-looking plant.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's a great thing to use around your yard. B-Dark will weigh in. B-Dark, do you think they look as good in full sun as they do in shade? I'm not sure about that, but they're great. They need a little bit of, I think the leaves look better with just a little bit of afternoon shade and enough good sun for them to bloom well. But they're really, really great around the garden. And the foliage is very nice. It's very lush. And the cones are just beautiful. They're really cool. They look like rich red lipstick-like, almost, pine cones.
They are nice.
Yep.
But, we're going to have a little cold snap, so looks like everybody better get out their plant blankets and get the tent ready, because it's going to be cold Tuesday morning.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So we need to get ready for it. So...
All right. We'll have a great day. We'll continue listening, and enjoy your Sunday.
All right. Thank you, Jarhead. So B-Dark says very invasive. So it really does spread around pretty good. That's B-Dark's pronouncement. You know, it's not like and she can see the cones. The cones are so beautiful. They're so cool. But you don't want to plant them where you've got other things that are really delicate. That's for sure. They're really nice. If you've got, you know, around azaleas, they can be pretty nice. If you've got big southern Indian azaleas, I think it's kind of a nice contrast. And in the areas where camellias and azaleas would grow well, these guys are going to be sort of at their peak of perfection. And that means a place where you're getting maybe a little bit of shade in the afternoon, where it's not so hot in the afternoon. And at noon, getting a little bit of shade so that the leaves don't burn. It looks like the leaves on some of her plants in fuller sun are burning a little bit. But it's a great little plant. It's aggressive. But it's not like elephant ears. Right, B-Dark?
FM Talk 106.5 with Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Call 251-343-0106. Here again is your personal nature expert, Bill Finch.
Yeah, welcome back. A question here from Carol in Huntsville. I got a couple of... Let me do the simple one first. There's a Carol in Bay Minette. Both are really great Carols, and I hear from them from time to time. And Carolyn Baymanette says, what about my persimmons? And what was your other one there, Carol? But both of the plants you asked about just going to be fine. No need to cover those. They're going to be plenty cold tolerant. when we're talking about covering trees, we're talking about persimmons are very, at least certainly on the Gulf Coast, and certainly up through central Alabama and up to Birmingham, they're going to be perfectly hardy through most winters. And you don't want to cover them. You want them to actually get used to the cold. So don't cover those plants. Even though they're young, they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine. Pears. Oh, it's a sand pear. Yeah, don't cover it. You're fine. So, Carol, that's a simple answer. I hope I've said it enough. I'll say it one more time. You're fine. Don't cover those plants. It actually could be a little detrimental to cover those plants, and we can talk about why if I have time. But I want to get to Carol from Huntsville because she's had a problem with certain types of redbud cultivars. And I will say that a lot of the cultivars of redbud that are introduced are really probably not well adapted to the Alabama climate. And it's not that they're not cold hardy, it's just that they're probably not, they're not used to the sudden changes. They may not be used to the sudden changes in temperature. But what Carol in Huntsville is seeing is that on some of the cultivars like Forest Pansy is that she's getting a lot of bark splitting. And it's usually after extremely cold temperatures. And what happens is the sun comes out the next day and there's a lot of it and it warms up that bark really quickly and it just explodes. And this is a known thing. This happens a lot. It's one of the reasons why in Scandinavia, you may, I don't know if you've been to Scandinavia, but if you see pictures of Scandinavia, they paint a lot of their tree barks white so that it reflects the sunlight, so that the bark doesn't heat up too quickly. And painting trunks white actually helps to reflect that sunlight. Now, you are probably, well, people in the South used to paint their trunks white, and they did it for a lot of reasons. And maybe some of those reasons were good, and maybe some of them weren't good, and it had its benefits. But I think white painted trunks are super cool. I just, particularly on fruiting trees and people's yards. There was a guy that I remember driving by his yard. Where was that? It must have been up to, gosh, was it up in Mississippi? Maybe around Jackson, Alabama. Maybe it was in Clark County. But you would drive by the yard, and maybe it's around Thomasville. And you would drive by the yard, and every tree in the yard would be painted white. And it was his wonderful way of saying, this is my yard. This is my way I'm defining my space. And I thought it was the coolest thing in the whole world. And people I know and love think it's the worst thing they've ever seen. It's up to you. But what are you going to do? One of the things that I think you can do is wrap that trunk. If you're going to get a real cold spell and you're worried about those cultivars, you can certainly wrap the trunk with some of the white tape that's out there that's actually designed to prevent that. You can put a little plastic, you can put one of those little plastic things around it, or you can just live with it. It's only going to happen on really cold nights followed by sunlight the next day. Anything you can do to keep that sunlight off the bark is probably going to stop that from happening. What I'm also interested in, and I could be wrong, but I strongly suspect, because I've never seen this happen with any of our native red buds, is that it's the cultivars that are the problem. And our native red buds would probably be just fine. And it's hard to beat our native red buds, in my estimation. And they are seeding in like crazy this year. I've never seen so many red bud seeds. Go look along the roadsides. Get some of those native red bud seeds, sow them in your yard, and see if they don't do a lot better than those cultivars like Forest Pansy. There it is, Carol. I hope that helped. Let me know what you think. What about the persimmon fruit? Should you pick it? Great question. No. If you're in North Alabama, possibly it's going to get down to 22. I do worry about it, but the cold at 28 degrees is probably not, it's not going to hurt the fruit, and it will cause it to ripen a little bit faster. So So a lot of those persimmons are going to be just fine. You're going to get a lot of fruit ripening all at once. That will be what happens, and you'll have to eat it. But I don't think you have to pick it if you're on the Gulf Coast. Don't worry about picking it. I also don't think it's even worth picking the citrus fruit at this time. There's a thought that the citrus fruit might actually stress the tree, but at 28 degrees, which is where most people are going to, in places where people are going to have citrus, at 28 degrees, fruits are not going to freeze too badly, and they'll still be very good to eat. Let's see. Ruby Red with some cosmetic benefit. Yes, Perry from Georgia. Yes, I did just get through talking about the pine cone plant that looks like a pine cone. Oh, boy. You know, voice messaging does terrible things. If you read that message you just sent me, Perry. But it looks like a pine cone turned ruby red with some cosmetic benefit. Yes, I did. The cosmetic benefit is that it is sometimes used as conditioners in people's hair. I don't need to condition my hair, so I can't tell you whether it really works. I don't need to condition my hair because I don't have any on top anymore. So it's all kind of beside the point, isn't it? So there it is. So I don't know about the cosmetic benefit, but people do it. People do it. It's a cool thing. What else am I catching up on? Picker Limon's Reef. Got that. And Jim in Georgetown is saying, yeah, we got here in November of 2003, and he's out beyond West Mobile, nearly to the Mississippi line. And it's he said our first frost freeze was always November 20th until about 3 or 4 years ago. Now it's coming about 7 to 10 days earlier. And I'm actually seeing that happen a little bit even earlier. The trend actually started a little bit sooner. But it's something we're seeing more of lately and something we're going to have to be prepared for. Let's see what else. Somebody asked me what kind of plants for winter, what kind of vegetables for winter. Oh my goodness gracious. Oh my goodness. You know, we got a whole list of things. Collards, kales, ruby chard. It's not too late for you to plant any of those things. Parsley is going to survive any winter. Cilantro does great over winter. I don't think there's a winter cold that will kill cilantro. It's an amazing thing. Parsley survives almost any winter spell, even around Huntsville. It's amazing. We forget about this. What else did I miss here? There's a whole gamut of things that will actually do really well. Because the days are getting shorter, they're not going to grow exceedingly fast now. And they probably won't start growing fast until after the first of the year. But you can still, if you've got sizable plants, you can certainly put them all out. I recommend there are a ton of winter vegetables. I mean, winter is our best time for growing vegetables. It's just that simple. But it's less trouble if you prepare for it and you do. It's just less trouble all around. But in general, I recommend getting them started a little bit earlier when the days are longer, because they'll grow and they can catch up on that growth before the days get too short, when their growth sort of slows down a little bit. But yes, they're going to survive the winter, and there's a whole series of things. So if you can find the plants, and they're sizable plants, go ahead and get them out. They'll be great. You know, Polecat, this is so interesting. Polecat was back in the old days when I had to suffer through Tiny Tim a lot. And we don't have that anymore. We don't have it anymore. And I think that's okay. I think it was good to retire that. I didn't do the retirement, but I think I got tired of it. I think, and unless somebody in the studio plays a joke on me, I don't think we'll hear it again, if that's okay. So you'll have to Tiny Tim, you'll have to pull out your recording of Tiny Tim and play it for yourself. How's that? Old lady told me pinecone ginger would kill shingles. I would not bet on that. I would not bet on that, B-Dark. I would not bet. Now, it is kind of a lotion. It is a lotion, and it kind of has a... It probably, as long as that lotion is on you, it may keep your skin from itching for a variety of reasons. But it will not kill shingles. Shingles is a virus, and shingles persists even after you're through with the shingles. But it may keep it from itching as much simply because it's a lotion. You can try it. You don't want to use it as a remedy for shingles, however, because shingles is a serious thing that can have serious consequences, and probably we all should get a shingles shot, which I have not done, and I probably should do, because we now know that shingles actually has a lot of really bad effects beyond just the itch. All right. Let's see here. What else we got? I've never splitting bark on native red buds. It's the 5,000 that sprout in the spring that keep me away from this native tree. Yeah. yes. It's definitely they definitely do come up around the tree if you have the seedlings. You know, it's a great tree. I think the cultivars are the problem. But it's the reason, and the reason is that sun on the bark. And they probably don't adjust to they probably don't have as thick a bark, and they probably don't adjust to changing temperatures as well as our native red buds do. There you go.
And the rain pours down like a holy waterfall over the Gulf of Mexico. Over the Gulf of Mexico.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Questions on conservation, natural history, and gardening? Talk with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 1065.
Yeah, so, you know, with shingles, it's when you touch things, and a lot of times when the air just blows over it, it can really make it worse. And so I think lotions do help, and so I will say for the itch, B-Dark, I think you could probably, any lotion might work. Some lotions might work better, calamine, for example, or some of the others that are designed to stop itch. But I would think that shampoo ginger could also be a useful thing if you didn't have other things in hand to stop that shingles itch. It's only stopping the itch. It's not changing the course of the disease, so I don't want to suggest that. The virus stays with you, and that's where you have to worry, because sometimes the outbreak of that virus can cause other problems in your body besides the itch. So you need to think about that. I do think there's a lot of evidence, and I'll just put in a plug for those of us getting older, and even those of us who don't know they're getting older yet. Probably a good idea to get a shingle shot. I think that's where the evidence is going. Because it does often result in some pretty severe effects much later. But shampoo ginger. Yeah. So, yeah. So, well, thanks, Perry. Perry sent me a nice note. Don has been wanting me to say this, and I appreciate it. You know, Don sees... And I've noticed that Don sees many of the things we do in the gardens as sort of a metaphor for how we live. And so a teepee for protection. And for Don, I think the teepee is not only about protecting the plant, but somehow becomes a symbol of us protecting each other. And I think Don sees lashing, our discussion of lashing, am I getting this right, Don, as a way of binding us all together, and in a good way. We should talk more about lashing, and Don is working on his garden for next spring, and it will involve a lot of lashing. And Don, we're going to have a lashing course before the winter's out, I promise. I think we had a lot of other things we had to talk about today, but before the winter's out, we're going to talk about lashing and how to do it. The challenge, of course, is that talking about it on the radio is a lot harder than showing people how to do it in life. And Don knows what I'm saying, because you got to learn about how to wrap it around different things. But lashing is a good thing. I always recommend the Boy Scout manual, if you can find an old one somewhere around, has all kind of great lashing techniques. But you can also go on the internet now and find good lashing techniques. And then you got to think about what twine you're going to use and why. And all of those things are fun to talk about, and I'm not going to talk about them today. But we're going to talk about lashing, Don, because I think it is a really important and fun part of gardens. Someone wrote me, and I don't remember who, said, oh, you know, I've got twist ties now, or zip ties, excuse me, but they don't take the place of lashing for a lot of reasons. You can use them, but they don't really serve the same purpose, and they don't do the same thing, and they don't hold things together as well as lashing. Lashing has some really cool effects when you bind things together, and you can bind them together in ways that they don't move if you do it correctly. And that's what lashing's all about. And it's simple. It's just about using thread. You don't use any nails. You don't use any glue. You don't use anything except a good, strong piece of twine, which is sometimes hard to find, I'll admit. But if you find it, you can do it, and you can hold things together in some really remarkable ways. Is that enough, Don? So I'm going to go on that. This is a promise that we're going to come in. We're going to talk more about lashing right now, and we're not going to talk about getting shots because B-Dark doesn't want to get them. So we're through talking about that. But she did. She's now forgiven me enough to send me a picture of a Boy Scout manual with lots of neat lashing pictures in it. So let's talk a little bit, though, about this cold that's coming up. And let me reiterate what I tried to start the show with, and which I hope we've tried to talk about. This is not going to be the coldest it's going to get this winter by any stretch. But it does worry me that it's happening much earlier than it usually would. And it seems to be, there seems to be a pattern. I'm going to try to do it a little better than I did it. A huge percentage of days we're getting frost, a huge percentage of years we're getting frost much earlier. The problem with that is that things aren't ready. And a lot of things, like the melaton, has not had a chance to fruit. Butter beans that we planted late may not be completely ready. I'm not ready to see my butter beans go, and they're going to go. They could have produced a lot more. That's one of the problems. The other problem is that the plants themselves haven't had a chance to really turn down their metabolism. Maybe that's the way to term to use. And so when they actually can turn down their metabolism a little bit as winter comes along, so that they're not, and as they do, they're less vulnerable to cold. So they'll begin to develop, they'll turn starches into sugars. It's a big process, and that means things like cabbages actually start tasting better. So your cabbages are going to be really nice as a result of this. But because it's happening so quickly, some of the edges of those cabbage leaves will get burned, and the cabbage will probably survive, and certainly in South Alabama, but they'll get burned. And just a little bit of covering over it. Things like broccoli. The leaves are going to be fine. They might get a burned on the edges, but you're not eating the leaves so much. You're really eating the buds, the flower buds, and those flower buds are very sensitive to cold. So while you might not lose the plant, you're very likely to lose the flower that you're trying to eat. The buds may be burned because of the cold. So you want to think about covering those plants and just a little bit of cover. If you've got newish citrus that you've just planted, this doesn't include kumquats, but most other citrus, if it's stuff you planted this year and you planted it late this fall, cover it just to be sure, because it's going to struggle at these temperatures, even at 28 degrees, simply because it doesn't have much way to trap heat. The plants are very thin. They don't have a lot of bark on them. They don't have a lot of trunk substance. And it's just, they're not really ready for this, more than likely. Cover those very young citrus. The older citrus are probably going to be okay because they've got a canopy that protects them. But it wouldn't hurt if you're a little worried, and it's easy to do, to throw a tarp over them. And then we're going to have many days of warm weather again before we have another freeze. Just try to get prepared. We'll be back next week and survey the damage.
Sugar magnolia blossoms blooming. It's all empty and I don't care.
So my baby down by the river.
Who should have to come up soon? Okay.